Hello, everyone. My name is Igor Piskunov, and this is the second episode of our space show, Starbound. Today, we are in Moscow, and this time, we will talk about the country where it all began and its people. We will talk about Russia's path to the stars. And most importantly, today we will have a live connection with the commander of the ISS crew, Oleg Kononenko, and not just him. People who are truly passionate about space have gathered with me here at Red Square. For the first time in the history of television, our program provides an opportunity to pose questions to a real cosmonaut who is currently on board the International Space Station. We will have two communication sessions and a short break between them when the orbital station falls into shadow, as the cosmonauts say. While we are waiting for the signal from the ISS, let's remember a person who was in the vanguard of it, Yuri Gagarin. This name is known worldwide.
Good afternoon. The Soviet Union announced it had launched Sputnik number 2.
What will Russia try to conquer next in this new world of space?
Being informed that the ISS has established a connection with us, which means it's time for the main part of our Starbound episode. Hello, Oleg.
Hello, Yegor. We can hear you well and see you perfectly clear. I'm even a bit envious of you standing on Red Square right now.
Let's move straight to the questions.
Hello. What types of plants are grown on the ISS and what are the challenges of growing plants in space?
Hello. Generally, it's leafy vegetables. Despite their small size, they are very rich in vitamins. Additionally, these vegetables have a relatively short growing season. From planting seeds to getting leaves, it takes less than a month. And salad crops. Of course, we've also grown wheat. But the ratio of edible to non-edible parts is about 50%. But we need to deal with the straw, and disposal is a big challenge in space. It is clear that for a mission to Mars, we will need to grow not just leafy vegetables, but also other types of vegetables like carrots, tomatoes, and peppers. I think the most challenging aspect is that when we grow something on Earth, we use the hydroponic method without soil, assisted by gravity. Here there is no gravity, only weightlessness, and scientists have to come up with various tricks to deal with this.
Thank you very much for your answer. Let's continue with our questions, please.
Mr. Kononenko, hello. Greetings from Yakutia. I have a question for you. I would like to know what changes in personality have you experienced during long missions? What were you like before the flight and how did you change after the flight? Thank you.
You know, it's hard to say. On the one hand, I understood what I would be doing and what I would see. I had been preparing for a long time for the first flight. The amount of training helped me create a model in my mind that was very close to what I actually saw during my space flight. But probably the most important thing for me was not just to see or experience something, but to successfully complete the flight program.
Hello. Please tell us, how would you spend your dream vacation in space?
Good question. I would just spend time by the porthole.
Hello, Mr. Kononenko. Please tell us, do you prank each other on the station? And if you play some tricks to joke around with each other, then how?
It's very hard to go without jokes here on the station. So we are all cheerful people. We tease each other in a friendly way. We joke around and do pranks. But let's keep that all on the station. We are very cheerful people and joke around all the time.
As they say, what happens on the ISS stays on the ISS. Who hasn't asked a question yet? You haven't. Please go ahead.
Hello, Mr. Kononenko. I would like to ask, what does space sound like to you? I mean, the moment when you are flying, when you are already in orbit, what does space sound like to you?
When I am inside the spacecraft, station, or ship, it's quite noisy because the systems are working and the ventilation system contributes significantly to creating the noise. When I go out into open space, sound doesn't spread in a vacuum. But inside the spacesuit, the systems that support my life are working, and I can hear them. If you're inside the station and someone is working outside, you can hear a scraping noise on the hull. It's quite audible inside and can cause some unpleasant feelings.
Mr. Kononenko, considering your prolonged stay on the ISS, I want to ask about your personal thoughts or possibly observations regarding the potential existence of intelligent life beyond Earth.
You know, I'm absolutely convinced that besides our life, there are other forms of civilization, but in what form, I do not know. But I am convinced that we are not alone in the universe.
It feels like some secrets are being kept from us. Please, another question.
Hello, Mr. Kononenko. I know that dogs, cats, monkeys, and even cockroaches have been in space. What about birds? How would they feel in weightless conditions? And have you ever tried bringing a bird on board as an experiment?
Well, I've never brought a bird, but there have been experiments with Japanese quails. These experiments started more than 30 years ago on the Mir space station. We managed to get some living chicks in space, but unfortunately they did not survive to adulthood. Scientists believe this was due to the chicks' inability to orient themselves in space with weightlessness, resulting in the disruption of their behavioral and feeding skills. To determine the causes of these anomalies, a quail experiment was designed, and a completely new incubator was created. A space flight involves a combination of factors that affect living organisms. These include weightlessness, an overload during launch and landing, radiation, an altered electromagnetic environment, and unique microbiological conditions inside the space station. Scientists, however, believe that the key factor here is weightlessness. So to test its contribution to changing quail embryos, they came up with a very special incubator consisting of two sections. In one of them, the eggs were kept under standard conditions aboard the space station, while in the other one, they were centrifuged. That is, centrifugal force was used to create the same effect as gravity. The idea was that eggs that are not centrifuged would have the same abnormalities, and the eggs in the centrifuge would develop normally. The experiment is over, and the results are coming back to Earth.
Thanks a lot. Yes, more questions, please.
Hello, Mr. Kononenko. Please tell us, do you meditate on board the ISS? If so, how does meditation help you, so to say, in your work or in your relations with colleagues?
You know, I've never tried meditation on board here or down on Earth. But now that you've given me the idea, maybe I'll try it out one day.
Maybe there will be a great opportunity for that after today's show. Yes, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Kononenko. Is it true that crying is not allowed on board the ISS, or is that a myth?
Well, I've never tried crying on board the ISS, but yes, you're correct. We and everything around us are in a state of constant weightlessness, and fluids are no exception. If a cosmonaut starts to cry, I think surface tension will start pulling the tears into spheres right on their face, and it will keep growing in volume. After breaking away from the face, the formed water sphere will immediately find a new surface to moisten it. So, feel free to cry about that.
Yes, thanks a lot. Let's continue, please.
Mr. Kononenko, I have a technical question. What kind of water do cosmonauts drink? Do they drink spring water from containers or from a urine water regeneration system?
You seem to have a lot of knowledge. Indeed, there are three types of water that we consume. First, it's imported water. It's the Rodnik system. Then it's water regenerated from condensate. And the third type is water obtained by regeneration from urine.
Well, thank you very much for such a candid answer. More questions, please.
Hello, Mr. Kononenko. Is it possible for humans to grow up in the conditions of the ISS? And what are the chances that in the future, humans will grow up on such space stations?
Be born there?
And to grow up there, too.
Well, you know, I've never been part of an experiment like this, so I have no idea in this regard. I can't say anything here.
The first communication session is over, and while we're waiting for the next one, let's talk about the ISS. The station has existed for over 25 years. It's the most expensive object built by mankind. In comparison, it's like 100 Burj Khalifa skyscrapers in Dubai. That is the tallest building in the world, but the ISS is in every sense the true peak of our entire civilization. The history of the ISS dates back to the Russian module Zarya, launched back in 1998. Today, the station has grown to many compartments and modules. Cosmonaut Konstantin Borisov shows us what it's like inside there.
Hello everyone from aboard the ISS. Now I want to give you a short tour of the longest route through the station. Let's go. We're floating through the MLM. We're turning. Behind us is the service module, where most of our work and daily life takes place, including meals, sports, station maintenance, and scientific experiments. Here we are passing alongside the Earth. Let's move ahead to the FGB module, where cargo is stored. And now we are crossing a kind of conditional border. We're in the American segment. It's a little darker here, and we fly carefully. Here we need to take a 90-degree turn, and this is our gym, with the best view of the Earth that you can get. We move farther forward, and what do we see? This is the American segment, the lab module, and our ship is docked at the upper port of Node 1. We turn left and we enter into the most spacious module on the ISS, the Japanese module. It's so spacious that I can't grab onto anything right now. I'm far away from any wall. I'm just waiting until I reach the opposite wall. Here we turn upward. Now we're flying upward into the storage module of the Japanese segment. We've now reached the end of our journey through the longest route of the ISS.
But of course, the ISS is not the first space station. Before, it was Mir, the first space station in history to have hosted over 100 people from 12 nations. There were other stations before that as well. Let's take a look.
Очень красив наш космический дом отсюда. Кажется, замерло все. Станция корабль.
Наши военные начали думать о том, каким образом можно было бы узнать о том количестве ракет, об их расположении, которые нацелены на нашу страну.
Mm-hmm. У нас, конечно, здесь очень плохо вот с музыкой. Такая неприятная атмосфера на борту. Мы даже иногда трески слушаем. Вот.
Может быть, сделайте нам музыкальную паузу.
Да, дадим.
Наш полет должен был открыть серию длительных пилотируемых полетов, открыть возможность программы «Интеркосмос» продолжить свое существование в космосе.
Нужно было создать станцию, которая обладала бы целым рядом новых, невиданных до сих пор качеств и, прежде всего, долговечностью.
Впервые появились небольшие индивидуальные каюты. Это уже действительно дом с удобствами.
Исследования, начатые одними, продолжают другие.
The creation of the space station, from my point of view, has been a great, big, beautiful technological experiment.
As for the ISS, it is a diplomatic vehicle for all of us. This is wonderful.
Нужно сохранить за нашей страной с таким трудом заработанное имя великой космической державы.
Right now, I'm being told we have re-established the connection with the International Space Station. With us right now is cosmonaut Oleg Kononenko, ISS Expedition 71 mission commander. Mr. Kononenko, are you with us again?
Yes, I'm back with you here.
We've received questions for our program from all over the country, but unfortunately, not everyone has been able to come to Red Square today to ask them in person. Anna Sitnikova, a photographer from Novosibirsk, recorded her question for you.
Hello, my name is Anna. I am from Novosibirsk. I have a question. Do you wave your hand when you fly over your homeland? And do your family members know that you're flying over Russia and wave back at you?
Well, you probably know that there are multiple websites tracking the ISS flight trajectory over one or another settlement. You can even run such a search. So yes, we do fly over Moscow quite often, and I know that my son is in the studio with you, and he can say whether he waves his hand when the ISS is flying over Moscow.
So who is the son of Mr. Kononenko here among you? That's you. Fantastic, let's talk with you. So do you wave your hand at your dad when he's flying over?
Well, at times, when I'm free from my studies, I try to track it, of course.
Great, wonderful. That's a nice surprise. Is there perhaps a question you'd like to ask too?
When are you coming home?
On September 23rd, Andrei Olegovich, all according to plan.
As planned. I've been listening to all these questions, and suddenly I've come up with one. What do you do if your nose gets itchy and you're in a spacesuit?
We have a special device for that, called the Valsalva device. This has two cusps, and you can put your nose in between those cusps and scratch it.
Hello. I'd really like to know how you perform first aid procedures in a weightless environment.
We undergo first aid and self-aid training while preparing for the flight. So if anything happens, we can provide help by ourselves. We've got a lot of first aid kits and a lot of specialized medical equipment. The mission crew even has a medical officer. And we all undergo some very serious medical training. If anything happens, we can always contact our flight doctor. By means of a video and audio call, we can get a consultation with a qualified professional from Earth. That's in case we can't take care of the problem ourselves.
And if I may expand this question, have there been any emergencies when crew members from different countries came to each other's aid?
Of course, many times. As you know, there was a catastrophe in 2003 with the space shuttle Columbia. The entire crew died. And so for a long time, new crews were delivered to the ISS by a Russian Soyuz spacecraft.
Mr.
Kononenko, could you tell us what's your typical day like on the ISS? How is this week different from the previous one?
Well, usually we get up around 6 a.m. and we finish a working day at 9:30 p.m. This week will be different because it will be dedicated to loading the cargo spacecraft Progress with the outdated equipment and household waste. In a month, this cargo spacecraft is scheduled to be undocked and a new Progress will come to this node.
Considering the current technological advances so far, is it likely that all people in the future will be free to travel, for example, in an orbit around the Earth or even to other planets? And would that happen in the near future or a long time from now?
I think that this future isn't so far off. I'd say that probably, very likely, all this will happen within the next 30 to 50 years.
Good afternoon. I've got a question. What would you like scientists to consider when developing equipment or materials that are delivered to the ISS? To revise meals or the packaging? Maybe you'd like some personal item to be delivered, or you'd like adjustments to some equipment so that it's easier to use it?
That's a good question. You know, I can certainly do a comparison with what we now have on the ISS. Almost all the ISS modules are multifunctional. That means that we exercise, eat, use the restroom, as well as do some technical work and run experiments in one module. There are also cabins for sleep and rest. To make it more comfortable, we'd like to have specialized modules for each specific task. The space station of the future must be self-sufficient. It must depend less on the Earth than the ISS currently does. That includes water processing, oxygen supply, development of the equipment for waste disposal, you are absolutely right about that, and manufacturing some spare parts on the station. Of course, we'd like to have enough simple domestic items like a coffee machine. Cosmonauts like coffee very much, but we don't have enough of it, and it's instant coffee here.
Thank you very much. Let's try to ask one more. You're welcome.
What was your most interesting assignment?
The most interesting assignment?
I recently carried out a 4D bioprinting experiment. It was very exciting, and it was the first time it was done ever in the world. I printed an organ with a memory effect, and it went on to fold into a tube. This means we'll be able to print such hollow tubular organs in space in the future.
You know, a cosmonaut is a very special kind of job, the best of the best. Each and every one who has ever flown is a hero of Russia. They continue working in space to make it one day accessible for all of us. Let's take a look at how they do it and what kind of experiments they're conducting aboard the ISS.
Mankind, as a result of its activities, as a result of burning minerals, actively saturates the atmosphere with various gases that exist in nature but are not so intensively emitted. This problem has really started to be raised at the highest levels. We need to do it all the time. We need to see who is emitting how much, where it is disappearing to, and what to measure greenhouse gases with. There are a lot of devices, laboratories where you can take a sample. We need to measure all over the planet and at different altitudes. And of course, there are not enough stations. We are talking not about dozens or even hundreds of stations. Naturally, we come to the conclusion that we need some space-based means. The first step was to create a device for the ISS. The first device has the beautiful name Rusalka, the mermaid. Here is one of its samples. It was delivered to the ISS in 2007. All the optics, all the electronics are packed in a box like this, a bracket for installation on the porthole looking down. And here you can even see there are buttons that the cosmonaut used to launch the measurement program.
We will talk about the BTN experiment. The name implies that this is some kind of toy that is supposed to measure neutron fluxes in the orbit where the ISS flies. We are looking at space rays in this indirect way. It's interesting to look at the physics in the surroundings of the Earth because of the way the magnetic field is arranged, the way the radiation belts are arranged. Plus, we should also add solar flares because particles charged by flares also generate neutrons. And we can study this generation process. On the practical side of things, this is about radiation assessment. Because neutrons have a very high damage factor. For each type of particle, there are factors that are then recalculated into harm to the body. Neutrons have a very high damage factor. In addition to measuring radiation, there is an additional factor that neutrons can be used for searching for water on Mars. We actually found that.
There is a very curious phenomenon called the cosmic X-ray background. So far, its parameters are not exactly known. Our experiment is designed to measure this phenomenon more precisely. What will it do? First, it is a very curious phenomenon from the point of view that it represents the radiation of all sources in the universe that telescopes cannot see. This monitor will be installed by the cosmonauts on the outer surface of the ISS. It will constantly look at the zenith, and thus in 72 days, it will have viewed somewhere around 80% of the entire sky.
That's all for today. I would like to thank everyone who joined us here on Red Square. And many thanks to Oleg Kononenko for taking the time to speak to us from the International Space Station. Mr. Kononenko, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for the interesting questions. Thank you very much.
I'd like to remind you that you can send your questions for cosmonauts to our email. I'm Igor Piskunov for the Starbound Project. Bye, everyone.